You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for June 13th, 2023. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life that you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start, as we usually do, by talking about the last weekly till. It was not last week's, but from 2 weeks ago, which was called A Healthier Point of View. The assignment was to survey your living space from a health and well-being perspective. Let's hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook, who conducted the recommended health and well-being audit this week. Please let us know in the comments. YouTube viewer CM had this to report. My poor lungs are being forced to filter out all the dust that I have not dusted. The dust really accumulates very fast under the bed, on the wood floor, and on top of the tall dresser. The dust in my bedroom is the very first thing I am going to work on in order to better my health. And it will help me to mentally de-stress just knowing I am breathing in cleaner air.
We are the ones directly affected by our living environment, right? If you're living with a lot of dusty air, you're affecting how well you can breathe. If you don't want the fridge, if you don't clean out the fridge, you're the one that has to smell it. I mentioned that because I just cleaned out my fridge this past Sunday because every time I opened the fridge, it smelled funny. And I kept randomly grabbing things that might be and throwing it out with no improvement in the odd smell. And I had finally had it on Sunday and cleaned out the whole fridge. And the culprit of the smell was a styrofoam container with partially eaten refried beans in it that had been in there too long, apparently. So now when I open the fridge, I don't snarl at the funky smell. So our living environment is directly affected by how much, does it smell bad? Is it too dusty? Is it too dirty? Are there too many bugs? This all impacts how well you live in the house. And so we're hoping that part of your goals for decluttering and getting your house under control is so that you're living in a healthier space.
M says, my space failed miserably. However, hey, but you get points just for doing the audit.
Right, for noticing.
For bringing it to your consciousness. M says, however, I continued working on the living room. Now, if someone comes inside, I will be ashamed instead of mortified. In another week, I should be up to not proud. Well, it's progress.
I love your slowly creeping scale. Right? That's great. Well, we're going to aim for, I feel great about it. And, you know, you will get there. I know you can do it. You're peeling the onion. You're improving it slowly over time, and you're going to get there. And when you do, let us know so we can cheer for you.
Paula says, I've spent the last few weeks dealing with digital clutter. Very tedious and slow going, but progress nonetheless.
I know. Digital clutter is so annoying. It's different, but it's harder. Like, I get more satisfaction of fixing physical problems than I do like making less digital footprint in my computer.
Yeah, you can.
It's not as much fun.
You can delete, you know, you can go through and file and sort and delete 10,000 emails, and then you close the lid of the laptop and you can't see any progress.
I know, right? It looks exactly the same. It's so true.
Paula said specifically she was working on file management and photos, a bit random, depending on what she feels like tackling at the time.
That's okay. Paying attention to, you know, moving a couple of projects forward slowly over time is the perfect thing to do. You feel like it today, you put a little bit of time into it today, you make that, you push it that much farther down the road. So good job.
Mouth says, I cleared the filters out of my air purifier. The carbon front piece was solid hair dust. Amazing how when new, it is easier to breathe in here, especially with summer heat. Thank you.
Right? It's a perfect time to be clearing that out because you're the AC is going to be running and all that fur is going to be flying like crazy. So now you just need to make a habit about clearing it out once a month, right? Going in there and checking the filters and cleaning it out once a month. It doesn't take very long, right? It's not like it's a big filter. It's not super hard to do, but you have the direct impact of it every day in that you get much cleaner, clearer air that way. Good for you.
All right. I think we should move on to our main topic because you have a lot to say.
Right? As usual, I didn't get to talk for 2 weeks. So now apparently I have a whole bunch more to say.
It's all backed up.
It's all backed up. Exactly.
The clutter set point, I'm putting that in air quotes, is what we call the volume of stuff in total or in any one category that feels like the right amount to you. It feels like the right amount to you. I should put right in air quotes as well.
Right.
When you go beyond this threshold, you may find that systems break down, negative feelings arise, and stuff makes that magic transition into clutter. Your set points can change over time, and you are the ultimate authority on what you choose to keep. Today, Gail is going to talk about what set points are, how we arrive at them, and how we can change them.
As most of you know, I was in Austin all last week for NAPO board business. And as a bonus to the trip, I managed to visit a regular viewer of the Clutter Fairy Weekly in Austin. She messaged me when she saw that I was going to be in Austin and asked me to come over for an assessment of her home. And we made that happen on my way back out of town on Friday. I'm going to keep this anonymous because she doesn't yet realize she inspired the topic this week, so I didn't get a chance to warn her in advance. As I walked around her lovely home while she showed me her pain points, I found myself looking at rooms that had large collections parked in all the available storage space in the house and the garage. She'd been working on the home for some time now and has put a lot of effort into corralling like with like, plus containerizing and labeling collections so she can easily find things. She's made more than one pass through the things to let things go and has been giving away or selling things online. She called because she was still feeling like there was more work to do, but she wasn't sure how to better organize things beyond her efforts so far. After I had been in a few rooms and she'd explained what she'd done so far and what she wished she could do and what still wasn't working yet, I found myself thinking and saying the same thing over and over. You've saved things beyond the capacity of your house to store it, and you need to lower the set point of your collections to match the storage limits of your house. So at this point, I think I have to talk about what I mean by set point. Again, set point in air quotes. I know what I mean by lowering the set point of your collections, but I want to make sure that you're still with me on this. Set point is a term related to how your body manages weight. Set point theory states that our bodies have a preset weight baseline that's hardwired into our DNA. And according to this theory, our weight and how much it changes from that set point might be limited. The theory says that some of us have a higher weight set point than others, and our bodies fight to stay within those ranges. Our body decides what its normal weight is. And if you lose a lot of weight fast, it quickly restores itself to the previous weight as soon as possible through slow down metabolism or triggering rebound consumption of calories. It's just a theory, and the theory doesn't explain everything a body does around weight loss. So it's not the definitive answer, but it offers an idea of there being a normal, in air quotes, weight for you. And the body fights to maintain that weight regardless of what pressure you put on it to change it. So how does this apply to the stuff in your house? What did I mean when I told my client that she needed to change the set point for her collections to match her home's storage capacity? That's why I wanted to talk about set points today, because I think this is a valuable thing to understand about your home and what you keep in it. All my clients have a level of stuff that they're used to living in and around, but that level often has no reference to the actual storage space that's available to house their stuff. The result is they're crowded out of their living spaces with clutter taking over, and it's not comfortable. For most of my clients, the set points of their collections is too high. The client in Austin she's lived in her home for most of 2 decades. And so she's been in the home long enough to gather some stuff there. Plus, she's a frugal person and she shops to realize savings and she likes to be prepared. So she has a lot of volume of supplies in case of emergency, in case of supply interruption, in case of some disaster that means she might run out of something. She shops for canned goods during Thanksgiving when they're on sale and stocks up for the whole year. She has a 4-drawer chest of drawers full of office supplies. She has 3 large water dispenser type water bottles, you know, where you flip the water bottle upside down and it dispenses. She has 3 of those bottles as the emergency water supply. So these are examples. My point is that she has a well-stocked pantry with a big back stock of paper goods also. And that theme played out all over the house, even with durable goods in addition to the perishable goods. Her overall question in every space that she showed me was, how do I make what's here fit better or look better or work better? And as I saw the total lack of any more available storage space and the already well-sorted and labeled stuff, my answer was this: you haven't missed finding some unused storage space, and you've done a great job sorting and organizing what's here. There's still too much volume of stuff for the house. You've got to change the set point of the stuff you keep to match your house. I made suggestions for how to reduce the volume she was trying to store, with a goal of it being easier to store and retrieve things, that the important collections are accessible, and she doesn't feel crowded out of her rooms. So here's some of what I suggested to give you some idea. I suggested she change the amount of pantry buying she's doing so it fits in the cabinet she has, and nothing has to be stored on the floor in the room. In other words, lower the set point to a lower volume of canned goods, canned drinks, and COVID supplies. In the bathroom closet, don't keep the towels that you don't use or like. I told her to lower the set point of the towels that she's keeping to the ones that she uses for herself, she and her husband, and ones that she's saving for the dogs, and get rid of the rest. There was a large collection of wash rags, for instance, and half of that stack was enough for her and her spouse. There was also towels in a color that she didn't like, so she was never using them, and she was saving them for when the other towels wore out. Like, that was one part of the reason why the closet was full. And so we talked about what towels she could get rid of and which ones to keep, and how to make space that way by actually letting some of those towels out the door. In the office, there was 2 4-drawer lateral file cabinets. So there was the big lateral files and 4 high. So they were office building style lateral file cabinets, big ones. And there was 2 of them in that room, which is a lot of cabinet. It's a lot of file cabinet for a home office to have that many drawers. And so I had her tell me what was in all of them, like what's the contents of each of these drawers. And several of the drawers are full of saved paper that are no longer needed to reference, really. So 2 full lateral drawers of travel information could easily be reduced to a half a drawer. A whole drawer of mom's estate and healthcare info from several years ago needed a new set point. While mom was alive and under my client's care, all that paper was necessary. Now the set point can be reduced to one file folder of potentially important mom reference material, and the rest can be shredded. I told her that I thought she could empty and get rid of one of those lateral file cabinets altogether, based on what she told me was in them. And if she's able to remove one of those lateral file cabinets, the sense of crowdedness in the office will be greatly reduced by having that large piece of furniture removed. In the guest bedroom, there was a collection of badge holders, you know, the little plastic sleeves that you put your name badge in, and then there's a lanyard that hangs on. She had a whole bunch of badge holders and badge lanyards from all kinds of trainings and conferences she had attended, and they were sorted together in the bedside table. The set point for that collection was way too high. She had saved all of them. So there was, you know, 100 badge holder pieces all sorted by type and well organized in the drawer, but she'd only used one lanyard cord ever from the collection. Clearly storing all of those pieces was using storage space for something that she rarely needed again. So keeping a few would be enough for her needs in her regular life. And changing the set point from all she ever got to just a few of them was a good goal. She wanted to know what I would store in there afterwards. And I said, nothing. It can be empty for when a visitor comes and needs space at the bedside table. I get that question a lot. I have to throw that in there. Often when we clear out a space, people look at the clear space and they go, oh, what should we put in here? And my answer is nothing. You can just live with the space being empty. I always get a shocked look when I say that. This process happens at all of my clients, though. This is not unique to my lovely, awesome client. And shout out to her and thank you so much for letting me come. My clients often look at their various collections in isolation, deciding how much they want to keep based solely on their interest in the items themselves. But those things are impacted by the size of your house, the size of your rooms and how many rooms you have, the storage space that's available. Some houses have more built-in storage than others. Some have more closets than others, et cetera. The frequency with which you use something, your level of interest in the hobby or recreation that the objects support. There's a bunch of factors that impact how much space a collection of things can take up in your home. And typically my clients haven't considered any of those factors when making keep toss decisions about a collection. Your house has a finite capacity. And you have to divide up that capacity into living space and storage space. The more you store in a space, the less you can live in a space. Yes, you need food in a pantry, and you want a stock level that gets you through a natural disaster when you can't replenish food for a few days, and that allows you to cook whatever you want most days. But you can only store what fits in the pantry and maybe a secondary location of backstock. The smaller the pantry is, the lower your set point should be. You may want to go shopping once a month, but if your pantry isn't a size that can hold a month's worth of food, it doesn't make sense to shop as if it did hold that much. It's better to shop for the 2 weeks of food that it can hold, and you'll have to go shopping twice a month. Sorry. It's a set point dictated by the pantry size, the size of the house. If you consistently find stuff sitting around on the floor waiting to be put away when there's room, your set point for that collection is off and it needs to be lowered. Because by the time you've made space for the stuff on the floor, you're already out buying more of that same stuff and it ends up on the floor too. You just keep restocking the floor. What we're trying to get you to face is this question. Does the stuff earn the space it takes up, or has it grown to take up more room than it deserves? It applies in closets with clothes and shoes. It applies with books and bookcases. It applies with files and papers in the file cabinets. Learning to live with a set point of stuff that takes use levels and available storage space into account is how you get your house under control. You may want a larger collection of something, but if that level is bigger than the space you want to allocate to the collection, then you're not going to match up. There's going to be clutter forever. Instead, adjust your expectations about what you can keep to the storage you have. For collections that you use more of or that you use more often, you can allocate a larger portion of the storage space to that collection and have a higher set point of stuff. For stuff that you don't use much, that you don't use much of or use very often, you can allocate a lesser portion of the storage space to it and lower that set point more drastically. Changing the set point of your stuff to match the available space in the house is the ultimate resolution of random clutter spilling out everywhere. Use that set point to filter your stuff and help you decide what needs to be rehomed and get the volume in the house down to something that you can live with. That's what set point means. So my question now is, who wants to talk about the set points in their house?
Paul, actually, we have a question about, and I'm not sure we're going to be able to answer this one, but Paul asked, is anyone else trying to figure out if Gail's set point is the same thing as Dana K. White's clutter threshold? And threshold is definitely a useful synonym. Yeah. We actually have a couple of people with hands up. So let's go to Mouth.
Hello, it's Marsh. I just put myself in the mouth.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for the podcast. This is powerful. And I've noticed that nobody's talking, Gail or Ed, which means we're all listening. I have multiple layers of set point going on. This is a powerful podcast, Gail. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
I actually did a lot of, we talked about shredding and getting rid of fear last week in the podcast. It was lovely. Mm. I wanted to also make a shout out to one of your members about the Ohio. The gentleman talked about handling a paper once. And one of my shredding is the 9 boxes of my husband's former medical papers. I've got 9 banker's boxes. So I wanted to talk about the paper compared to the emotional and the loss and grief, that set point. And I find it eloquent that you're saying, I couldn't figure out how to do it, Gail and Ed and everybody. And this topic today, it's such a multi-layer freedom and choice, Gail, of what you're offering. I'm struggling to clarify what I'm trying to say.
But your example of the paperwork, your husband's medical paperwork, who it's been over a year since he passed away.
It's 18 months next.
Right. So at this point, the paper that was so necessary for him, for you to manage while he was alive, is now there's not the same urgency around it. And so it's more of a keepsake now, and it's more of a trigger of the grief, right? It's still part of your grief process, but you can have some of those papers as memories and keepsakes and still not have to have 9 whole boxes of them.
Right. Because the boxes are just the ones I discovered, Gail. It's not
right
counting the piles. And yet when you talk about that key set point, I never got that. The light bulb just went on right now talking.
Yeah. And now that collection should be way smaller than it is, right?
And I have an antique file cabinet that I've started putting my most treasured documents in. Mm. And the rest, I might keep 1 or 2 papers. And that's all I need.
Yeah.
And that, when you talk about the set point, about, you know, the power inside of myself to make the decision to move these collections and treasures,
mm-hmm.
you just gifted me. And I thank you.
You're so welcome. And remember that, I mean, I know going through that paperwork will trigger your grief, but remember that you have much more valuable keepsakes of him than his medical paperwork.
Right.
Like it's always an experience of, this paper reminds me of all of the doctor's visits and all the trauma that we went through and all the things that were going on around his health. And it all was very important in the moment, but it's just like the wedding has gone by and you're never going back to the wedding again.
Right.
This paperwork, it is only serving as an anchor to that pain and suffering. And so pull the few things that might be useful for you later and let the rest go and lighten your load.
When you talk about the set points, the last thing I'll say is the comfort, the actual sense of comfort when I walk in or I look at that pile, it's like a sense of comfort instead of the loss. And that is a different, could you address that little bit of that kind of
set? Yeah. I'm sure that it feels familiar and it reminds you of him and that feels warm to you. And I would just think about what other things in the house remind you of him, what other keepsakes that you have that remind you of him, and make those things visible instead of the boxes of paper.
Right.
You want to be able to walk in the house and remember your husband in a comforting way. And so making his presence visible to you in some way besides the boxes of paper is respectful of the limited space that you have,
right?
And you need to be able to function in there. And so those 9 boxes have a big footprint. And so there's probably other things that remind you of him better that don't have such a big footprint.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you for taking my hand up.
Sure. No problem. Thanks, Marsh.
Let me read a comment from CJ and then we'll go to Kara, who has her hand up as well. CJ says, actually, I believe what Gail is talking about equates more to Dana White's container concept. There's a space limit that must be respected.
Yes.
Then the clutter threshold is applied. How much stuff you can manage to keep up with easily, regardless of if it fits the space already. So the threshold idea, I guess your discussion of a set point is kind of combining the two of those things together, an evaluation of the physical space available and also your own want, need, tolerance, et cetera.
That makes sense. Yeah, it does.
Let's go to Kara. Go ahead and unmute yourself, Kara.
Hi,
how you doing?
Hey, this is great. The collection in the context instead of just looking at the collection. So I just jotted a whole bunch of things that are overflowing that now I can address with that in mind. All of a sudden I have books on the floor. They're not all fitting in the bookshelf. So that's
See, there you go. Right. And the first thing that somebody's going to ask me is, should I get more bookcases? And I'm always like, no, that's not the problem here. The problem here is that your collection does not fit your space and you need to change what you're going to have in the house.
Right. And no, the yarn I went to an estate sale, bought yarn that I couldn't find anywhere else. Well, now there's kind of open bins in the garage. That's no good.
No.
Now I want to interject that if you have a great big bookshelf spaced hole in your home and also too many books, then yes, you can buy another bookcase. Is that fair, Gail?
Okay.
And little things like postcards. I have postcards, to be sent like in 3 different places. So that's no good. I have lots of crystal wine glasses that are taking up space in the laundry room cabinet. So coats, many coats that are stuffed, that coat closet is too stuffed. And then
area of town do you, like in the country do you live
in? Minneapolis.
Well, so it's cold there at least.
Yeah, but I don't need that many.
But you probably don't need that many. You're right.
Yeah. Well, thank you. New perspective, new way.
You're welcome. I'm glad it was helpful. Thanks for sharing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, go ahead, Mavis.
Hello from South Africa.
Oh, my goodness. You're probably my first South African listener that's been on the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
I've been listening to some of your older material, and I just want to say thank you so much for the body of work that you are leaving. It is helping me so much. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for sharing that.
My question is regarding, I think your set point concept is very much what I am trying to deal with currently. I have hoarding disorder, and so the decluttering is extra slow and painful in my case. Not able to go at a normal pace, obviously, but I am being consistent and I'm doing what I'm able to do, whether it's one small thing a day or, you know, like I understand that my pace is abnormally slow, and I have made peace with it to the extent that I can, and I am doing the work, but like, currently, yeah. For example, I am I'm dealing with pots. Such a stupid example, but also so perfect.
Like cooking pots, you mean?
Cooking pots, yeah.
Okay.
So I understand that I have one pot cupboard, and that is the defined limit of how many pots I can have. And so it should be relatively easy. So I am trying to now get away from that place where you have these stacks of pots, you know, these towers of pots, so that you have to undo a tower every time before you can access. So I'm trying to move away from that, which is exactly the point, to reset to a lower set point so that you don't have that overstock continuously stealing all your storage space. But right. I am finding that the logical conversations do not help me. The do I use it? How often do I use it? Which one do I love more? I find that that still paralyzes me. I love all of it. I use all of it occasionally. And so I was wondering. Yeah, I'm just struggling. I think I understand the concept of having a defined space, and that there needs to be less in there than there was before, and that there's a scale of things you love more and things you are more able to let go because it's old and worn or whatever. But yeah, I'm really battling with that. Is there any
Can I ask some questions of you? Sure. So the first question is, do you like to cook?
I do.
Okay. So if you like to cook and you do cook often, then that means that the collection that makes sense for you in this area probably needs to have a higher set point than me, who loves cooking with my life. Right. So I need cooking utensils to survive, not variety of cooking utensils, because I think cooking is fun, like Ed. So what the volume of stuff that I have in my kitchen is vastly different than what he has in his kitchen because he likes to cook. So because you're struggling and you're doing it slow anyway, I would take a very peel the onion approach to working in the kitchen and making your choices about the kitchen. If you have a bunch of pots and you use all of them occasionally, but there's going to be some that you use, like you got to have your go-to cook pots, right? So those that you use 3 or 4 times a week, those definitely are in the keep pile. And then you can look at those pots and go, okay, this one that I've used once this year, if I subtract this pot, can I accomplish what I do in this pot in with another piece that I'm keeping? Can I lose that functionality by letting go of this one pot and still once a year make something happen with the other stuff that I've kept and subtract one pot at a time and then live with it and see if it's, you know, can you adapt to the fact that that option isn't there anymore?
This is where the advice that came from someone who'd moved recently can be useful. A viewer or listener told us she'd boxed up her kitchen, and when it came time to put it all away in the new place, or after a renovation, I don't remember which it was, she left it in the boxes for the first several months, only pulling out what she was actually using. And so you could sort of do a reverse of that and take out things you feel like you might not need to hang on to and box them up. And if a reasonable period of time goes by without you having to dig them out, then you might
maybe get, it's okay gain, to let it go,
gain some comfort with letting some of them go.
That does work for me occasionally. If I remove it from sight, sometimes it does break the over attachment I have to it, but it does not always work for me. Sometimes when I open the box, I know I'm like, hello, old friends. And I'm like,
well, so think of them as old friends that are going to go be friends with someone else. And I would box them up and take them out of the kitchen. I would box them up and put them in a completely different room. And, okay, you know, and see, and then, you know, when you go look at them again, you're going to say, okay, you are my friends and I've lived without you and I can let you be friends with somebody else.
I'm going to let you go live your best life somewhere else.
Because I think I struggle because a lot of the stuff that I am having to let go is I am exactly that person that you were talking about where I also have ADHD. So the hyper-focus and the all-consuming passion that grabs you, you know. So I would buy everything that exists, every color, everyone, you know. So the collections are just too much. But they're beautiful and functional and useful. And do you understand? It's not that they're old and ratty and it makes it easy.
No. Yeah, no. And most of the time it's not that it's old and ratty. It's just that the volume is more than an average person can manage and live with, right? And so you're not making the choice because the item has failed in its job or function. You're making the choice because ultimately you want to live in a less crowded space. And that doesn't mean that the object isn't doing its job or isn't functioning how it's supposed to. It just needs to do that job and that function in somebody else's house and not in yours. Right? If you are one of those people that buys the shirt in all the colors because you love the shirt, like then you have to go dial that down by saying, okay, my three favorite colors in this shirt are A, B, and C, and all the other options are pretty, but they don't have to live with me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so it's that sense of releasing it.
But some of it I find surprisingly hard. Like I didn't think pots would trip me up.
but because you like to cook, you can see way more possibilities for those cookware pieces than I could. Right. Like I just look at this like, I never use that pot. And I just, you know, it's very easy for me to let it go. But somebody who's more skilled and has more reference points for it, it means that you have a better understanding of all the ways that it could be used. And so you feel like you're giving away more function than I would feel like.
But also this is good because I understand what you're saying because clothes was easy for me. So it obviously means that the more involved you are, the more of a hobby it almost is.
The harder it is to let go of stuff.
One of the more difficult
categories.
To me. Yeah. And I didn't think about that aspect of it. Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks for joining us from South Africa. That's amazing.
Thank you, Mavis.
We're glad you came and we hope to see you again.
Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Barbara commented, I love office supplies, but discovered after combining my husband's cache of Post-its with mine, that we had two lifetime supplies, at least. And 12 years later, although I have given away many, I still have a surplus. I need to do another pass. I would submit that most of us could probably adjust our set point on office supplies just because of how much patterns and habits of work have changed in recent years.
100%.
That's a good category to take a look at if you haven't evaluated it in a few years.
And Post-its, oh my God, Post-its are like the magic invention that everybody loves. And then they made them in a million colors and with sayings on them. And Like they totally.
And teeny tiny ones.
Oh, and you know, little strips and big ones you stick on the wall. And like they just became this thing that everybody has to have. And I laugh because in the chest of drawers at the house in Austin, I pulled open one of the drawers and there was a huge stack of Post-it notes. And I'm thinking, yeah, you can't use all these Post-it notes in your lifetime. It's insane. And they're still useful. So sending them on to a teacher, a secretary's office, someplace where a small business, a nonprofit, fill in the blank, where they don't have to buy the supplies, you can give it to them. You know, they're little pieces of paper. They're super cheap to buy. And so we all have more Post-it. There's like enough Post-it notes to go around the world a million times. We would never, in the apocalypse, there would still be Post-it notes left over. It's just one of those things that we all got super attached to in a hurry. So I think it's definitely something that, and you know, you can make it a game. Like, how many can I ever run out of Post-it notes? Like, can I get rid of a whole bunch of Post-it notes and have a small supply? And oh my God, if I run out of Post-it notes, I can go buy more. Won't that be fun? Right? See if you can ever arrive at having run out of Post-it notes. And you can come and tell us all about what it was like to not have a Post-it note. Oh my God. Because I don't think anybody will ever come to that place. Truthfully.
Suzanne commented, and this is on the subject of definitions and Dana White. Clutter threshold is what we are comfortable with, what makes us feel good. Gail is speaking about the space and containers in a home. Are they well matched? A bookshelf that is balanced or a bookshelf that is double packed with clutter, but you're good with, are, you know, and she says, we're here because we are each dealing with clutter.
And I think you wouldn't want to come listen to me unless you already have decided that there's too much of something somewhere in the house, right? That's sort of the definition of our viewers.
Right.
There's too much of something somewhere in the house.
I also wanted to say on the subject of Dana K. White, I have started to read one of her books, but I haven't gotten very far yet. So I can't really contribute to that conversation. But when I get through at least one of her books, Gail and I will have a conversation about whether to do a Dana K. White episode.
Whether to cover her.
Okay. Tammy has had her hand up for quite a while. Go ahead, Tammy.
Oh, yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Great. Okay. I'm on earbuds. I'm outside. Yeah. So I do stream of conscious writing. I was just putting in the chat and it helped me think kind of at the question because I have these spiral bound little notebooks, you know, for school that are very cheap and I can easily fill one a day. But it's not just the journaling about my feelings or the creative writing in the free classes I do. It's also doctor notes or grocery list, or here's some note I talked to somebody and wrote in a number I don't know what I wrote down for. You know, it's I was looking yesterday like, what's in these things? I have like 50 a week. And I'm like, what do I do with them? I don't have a computer. You know, I feel like when I am able to go like to the library computer and type them into a document, it feels more contained and compartmentalized, but I also don't want to throw them all away. The writing's really good. And I keep thinking, well, I'll start a blog or, you know, you know, and I want to get the doctor notes together, but I don't know. Do you have any ideas? Because it's just really, I need a set point. I don't know how to define that. Or what is my goal? Do I want to compartmentalize or how, what? Yeah.
So unless you want to drown in spiral notebooks, I mean, if you're actually filling up 50 a week, you have a lot to say, and you cannot keep all that whole list for your whole life. It will definitely overtake you very quickly. So, I mean, I'm thinking that you probably need to filter some of them as you go. I don't know how to say this exactly because I'm registering what you're saying, that it's a random mix of journaling and other kind of information in those binders. And you got to have an attrition policy around these things, right? So all writing is not equal. And your stream of consciousness is an exercise that you do to help you process and think through and get clear and honor your feelings and acknowledge what's going on in your head. And having saved all that stuff doesn't change the exercise that you do every day. Like every day you go in and you stream consciousness again. And so I think that there's some level of, you have to decide, okay, that was stream of consciousness 2 years ago, and I need to shred that, trash that, let it go, because I have what's happening for me today going on, so that it's a rolling collection of getting rid of old stuff, because I'm always generating what's happening for me now new. And I know it's shocking to think about letting go of some of it, but if you're really generating that volume, then I think you just have to decide everything beyond 2 years ago is now old news and not current for where I am now. And you need to make space for what's coming out currently.
Can I jump in?
Yes, please.
I think one way to think about this question, Tammy, is think about, you know, what parts of it are like are the daily mail that comes in. You know, if you don't deal with the daily mail at least a few times a week, it piles up and becomes completely unmanageable, and you drown in it. And likewise with your writing, if you just keep adding to notebooks and never do anything with it, then it becomes this monster of there are thoughts I wanted to keep in there. There are to-do list items. There are grocery lists. There are doctor notes, whatever. And so I think at the very least, maybe you could consider trying to establish a habit of looking through yesterday's notebook or notebooks to find critical information that you want to put somewhere else. A phone number that you wrote down should go into your phone book. You know, an email address could go in, you know, right into contacts in your phone. To-do list items would go off to a to-do list or planner if you use one. The idea being that if you can unload on a regular basis the really critical stuff that you are worried about losing, then all that's left is the writing. Do you want to reread these things? How often or how soon do you want to reread these things? And create a set point based on that. I'm going to read it again one more time 3 months later and pull out anything that's really of great value. If I wrote something that I love and I want to save, then take that page out and put it in something curated that contains the real gems, because you have to do something to keep the volume from completely filling your space in a short period of time. Does that make sense?
I think that this is something where it's all very personal writing, and everything that you write cannot stay with you. It cannot all be valuable and stored unless you go to some kind of digital solution. And since that's not your bag, it's not your thing, then you have to contend with the physicalness of the paper and figure out a way to manage and let go of some of your old thoughts, even though they're your thoughts and they feel precious.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I think what I need to do here is a daily habit or a weekly habit of go back through and put them, you know, like y'all said, put the doctor thing notes or the important numbers in a place. Yeah.
Cue it up to be shredded.
Yeah. And the ones that are the repetitive things, because some of it, since it is stream of conscious, I know, like, I have the comfort and security of knowing this is going to come back up tomorrow or another day. It's going to come back up. I can let this down. So, yeah.
Oh, there you go. See, yeah. You got a way to filter it. That's good.
Thank you.
Okay, cool. Yeah, Tammy, thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, guys. Thanks so much. I'll mute. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, let's go to Liz.
So I have a short story about sticky notes.
Okay.
I got swept up in it. I purchased from an online, I think it was Staples at the time, they'd sell you a treasure box, and it was 10 pounds of whatever kind of sticky notes that didn't get sold. And I would get these. I got two of them over the years.
You know, you get a $20 coupon. I never heard of this.
And discounts. And then I would take out the fun ones and then bring it around with me in my car. And anytime I'd stop with my friends walk in, or I'd hand them out for like tips for guys behind the counter at the medical marijuana store. I mean, they were just fun. And so, yes, I gave into that. Oh, I want to have them, but I figured out a way, being as I'm over 60 years old, how to figure out how to keep it, just to keep it flowing, you know, bring it in and send it out.
Thank goodness you sent it out. Oh my gosh, 10 pounds of post-it notes. That's serious.
Yeah. It was always fun.
Thanks for sharing, Liz.
We are running out of time and need to talk about a few more things. So
Okay, cool.
Let's talk about next week.
Okay.
The way we talk about our stuff is a clue to the undercurrent of feelings and experiences that influence our choices. Words like mess, shame, and worth are loaded with history, meaning, and judgment for each of us, and they can also contain the power to keep us stuck or move us forward. Next week, we're going to examine words that we use to describe our cluttered lives and share insights into how to reframe language to more clearly describe and manage our stuff. Join us next week for Rethink and Reframe Your Clutter Language, The Power of Words 2. This is a topic we did, I think, last April or so. Mm. And we only covered about, we probably didn't even cover half of the words we had talked about talking about. And so we're gonna go back to that.
Okay. And give you a whole new list of words to think about.
Why don't you give us a tittle?
Okay. This week's tittle is titled Volume Control. This week's assignment is to evaluate the current set point for one category of stuff in your life. Identify a collection or a category of stuff that frequently causes clutter in your home. Assess the storage space you've allocated to that category collection. How tightly does it fill or exceed the main storage space you've assigned to it? Do you keep some items in secondary storage locations in the house or elsewhere? Does this category of stuff tend to show up as clutter in random locations or on the floor? Think about how and when you use, consume, or enjoy this collection of stuff. How essential is it to the functioning and enjoyment of your life right now? Now consider whether the space you've allocated for this collection reflects how important it is to you. Ask yourself this question. Does this stuff earn the space it takes up, or has it grown to take up more room than it deserves? If you arrive at the conclusion that your set point for this category or collection has outgrown its importance to you, then decide how much would be a more reasonable volume to keep. This step is a project in itself that may take several sessions of work, so we encourage you to make a few notes and revisit this tittle as many times as you need to until you're satisfied with your answer. We're hoping that you take this concept of what a set point could be and apply it to collections that you feel like are causing you problems, out of control, tripping you up, giving you, making you struggle, and see if you can't assess what's going on with that collection and change the set point for yourself on what you actually keep.
Okay.
Let us know.
Before we go, Gail, it's been a while, so why don't you give us a quick commercial for virtual organizing?
Okay. So virtual organizing is how I can talk to those of you that are not in the Houston area, and we could get together for an hour on Zoom, and people have very successfully taking their iPhones or their iPads or whatever and shown me around and asked me questions about, I'm having trouble with this. I don't know what to do in this area. This is how I get hung up and stopped or frozen in this area. I've helped people plan moves. I've coached them. My favorite moving couple was in California, and they would do a Zoom meeting with me with areas that they were arguing about. And so the three of us would Zoom together and we would talk about the things that were coming out of the kitchen cabinet. And I would help them negotiate between them about what things needed to go to donation and what things needed to go to the new house. And so I've done all kinds of things. I can help you make a plan. I can help you get over things that are difficult and a struggle. I could just be your accountability partner so that you're working on something while I'm there for you to ask questions and talk about. Like I've gone through people paperwork with people over Zoom and had them explain to me the piece of paper and talk to them about what it is. So it's a great way for you to spend an hour, get some support, and we can see each other and talk, and you can show me whatever you need to show me. So love to see you. Love to talk to people all over the world. So it would be so much fun for me if you do it.
Okay. If you're ready to give virtual organizing a try, go to cfhou.com/virtual. And click virtual organizing session to see a list of available time slots. Please don't click free assessment. That only applies to in-person assessment.
For me to walk to your house
in the Houston area.
Can't walk to South Africa. Sorry. Right.
And if you'd like to try virtual, but you're not sure it'll work with your device and internet connection, just drop Gail an email at info@clutterfairhouston.com. And she will set up a test meeting at a time that's convenient for both of you to try it out, make sure it works before you pay for it.
right, exactly.
Okay, exactly. If you are watching this on YouTube, we'd love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook. Or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep your questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere else that you encounter us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks, everybody, for coming. It was good to see you. Thank you so much to my lovely Austin client that served as our inspiration for today. And the topic about set points, it's always fun when my clients drive the conversation. So we will look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.